Accession number 29424, reel number 6.
Instead of being treated as outcasts. And so he and the owner, the Turkish owner of a restaurant, actually put on a real wake for the family, invited all their friends, and they had a big celebration of her life and death in this restaurant. This lovely Turkish restaurant owner, whom I got to know as well, and this Christian journalist, organized a wake for her. And I thought that was very moving.
How were you regarded? You know, the fact that it was known that you had met the individuals and you'd met groups of them and you were acting really as a...
Well, as I say, I didn't have a high profile. I succeeded in keeping it secret until Spiegel published it, and then I cleared out in Germany, and I think my role was fairly quickly forgotten. So frankly, I didn't have much reaction. I went straight back to England. Actually, when between my mediation and their death was their trial. The trial hadn't started actually when I was involved. So I did go over to the first 2 days of their trial and sat in the courtroom. And one or two journalists recognized me and wanted to talk to me about it, and I refused to give them an interview. I said, no, I haven't come here to be a public figure about this. I can't help being interested in how this trial goes. And to see them in a courtroom was an interesting experience.
How did you regard them, Paul? You know, the religious side of you. They had done terrible things, hadn't they, with their violence against what they would say the
well,
state.
Well, to be quite frank, as a pacifist, I regarded them the way I regard soldiers. I mean, soldiers have to be prepared to go and kill for their nation. These people went into what they regarded as a war. I suppose it's more relevant now that we're talking about a war against terror. We're in the middle of that. I mean, you know, the story in a strange sense has become contemporary again because terrorists are on the agenda in a big way. Only now they happen to be Muslims. And come from a different culture, but the problem in itself is not a different one. And they of course give their lives. I mean, I don't think the bottom line of people had ever thought of using themselves as bombs and as suicide bombers. I don't think the idea had occurred to them. But they were in the frame of mind they could have done that.
I suppose culturally that was beyond, wasn't it?
It wasn't part of the culture. Yeah. And so to be a suicide bomber is a much more recent phenomenon. But they fit that mindset. And, you know, if that had been within their mental framework, I'm pretty sure they would have tried it. So, you know, I feel like them, like the Middle Eastern terrorists in London. I think they're deeply deluded. I think they're quite wrong in what they're doing. But their mindset is not different from the mindset of a soldier who is convinced he's fighting in a just cause. So I don't think the American soldiers in Iraq, who in my opinion ought not to be there, I mean, I think they're fighting an unjust war, but I don't hate them. I'm sorry for them in many ways. They've been caught up in other people's battles. I don't think they should be. And in the same sort of way, I was sorry for the Bader-Meinhof prisoners.
The issue of redemption, was there, you know, did you feel that there was redemption for them?
Well, being, I suppose, what theologically is called a universalist, I think the love of God, my sort of God, ultimately condemns none of us. And I always say, with every sinner, there but for the grace of God go I. If I'd grown up in their circumstances, if I'd had the same pressures of an emotional and intellectual kind put on me, I could have become one of them. I happen to have been brought up by parents who are Quakers, who've brought me up in a very different tradition. So I can easily, as a pacifist, condemn all violence, but it doesn't mean I don't understand. And I didn't talk religion to them. I may have used that as an attempt to help the despairing Ulrike Meinhof. But no, I didn't try to talk religion to the others, because I don't think it would have... this was the moment to evangelize them, as it were. I really think that would have been a wrong tack. I think some of my evangelical friends would say I'm completely wrong. I should have spent all my time telling them about Jesus, and that might have revolutionized them and changed them. I wouldn't want to rule that out as a possibility, but it's not where I was.
Yeah, and after all, some of them had been through that.
Yeah. I think they would have laughed or rejected me if I'd tried that tack.
Yes, that must have been a very difficult mission for you. It was a mission, wasn't it?
It was difficult. I don't think it was more difficult than a lot of other things I've had to do in my life. It was more unusual, and therefore, of course, it was also an extraordinary challenge. I mean, I couldn't pretend that I didn't think it was a great privilege to be able to do it. In that roundabout sort of way, I can almost say I enjoyed the experience.
You seem to have learned a lot from
it. Yeah, that's right.
You were saying earlier, you know, the lessons.
It was a bit of my maturing process to have to go through that. I didn't mention that Buback, the state prosecutor, who in the end had to agree, and of course I had to go and see him as well as go and see the prisoners. I mean, because it was a negotiation between him as the head of the prison authority and the prisoners, and so I had to try to persuade Buback to do a few things that would save the prisoners' face and enable them to stop the hunger strike, who were striking for better prison conditions. And if he relented on small things that wouldn't affect security, then they could say they've won a little bit of their battle. And he was very, very reluctant to give even a centimetre. And I found him a very distasteful person. I mean, I just have to say that. In a very similar way, I found some of the prisoners very distasteful. So, you know, both sides, I found in people who were very stuck in their own ideology and they're certain they were they and only they were right. And sadly, he paid the price, and it was murdered by those who were still outside. So Buback was one of the victims of the whole thing.
Did it gradually fade away after that? You know,
it did.
After the murders
it
and
did.
The
yes, some of them personally relented and gave themselves up to the police and said that they were reneging on all sorts of violence and were virtually amnestied. I mean, they were tried but given nominal sentences and let out if they promised never to be violent again. A few were never uncovered, probably had false names, just disappeared into society and have still not been... theoretically, the police are still looking for them 20 years later, you know. And one escaped from the whole thing, gave herself a new name, and came to England and revealed herself to me, and I didn't give her away. I suppose I was technically breaking the law by not giving her away.
I suppose you were giving her a chance, weren't you?
She hadn't killed anybody.
Yes.
But she'd been complicit in what the others were doing. And she wanted to get away from the violent scene. She didn't want to be involved anymore. And she got a false passport or something and came to England, gave herself a new name, and got a job as a trainee motor mechanic in Hampstead. And stayed in that position for 15 years, working in England. And then at the end of 15 years decided it was time to surface. Gave herself up to the British police, said who she was, and was sent back to Germany, and was one of those who was then pardoned. And she's now a working journalist. But I knew all along who she was, and I didn't give her away.
This is really a very dramatic example, isn't it, of how you are prepared to confront people who are violent. It must have been one of the most explicit, I would think, wasn't it? You know, people who were out to murder or to die and, having killed. Quite a challenge.
Yeah.
Was it understood, your role in this country? I remember seeing you on TV.
It was
about this. Is that right?
Very much later. I mean,
yes,
when it had ceased being politically relevant, I wrote an article in the Observer, kind of telling the story when I felt. It's long after the death, long after the RAF was still a political issue, then I felt free to write about it. So I wrote a piece in the Observer, and I suppose then I was interviewed on radio or television or something. So in that sense, many, many years later, I felt free to go public about it. But it didn't raise huge interest. I mean, it was, yes, I had some personal correspondence. I mean, No kind of enmity came. I mean, I wasn't particularly criticised. I mean, trying to end a hunger strike and save lives on both sides was thought to be quite a respectable thing to do. I think the only people who were at the time worried about it were officials of Amnesty International, who didn't want Amnesty to get caught up in this. And that's one of the reasons I stayed so anonymous at the time, because it would have confused people's image of Amnesty, because Amnesty definitely does not campaign for people who are in prison for having committed violent crimes. And that was a certain problem. And one of the many reasons for anonymity at the time